The Book of Daniel, number 123, unveiling the prophetic significance of Daniel 11 verse 40. Key takeaways. Daniel 11:40 stands as a beacon of prophetic insight within the scriptures, paralleling the profound significance of Daniel 8:14. The verse, encapsulated by the imagery of the Hiddekel and Ulai rivers, carries a dual temporal significance, marking both 1798 and 1989 as crucial junctures. Unveiled in 1989, it uncannily symbolizes the collapse of the Soviet Union, echoing the divine orchestration of historical events. Moreover, this verse foreshadows the impending climax of prophetic history, culminating in the prophesied events leading to the Sunday Law and beyond. Amidst theological skepticism, the verse's expansive historical breadth, akin to Revelation 13:11, serves as a cornerstone of prophetic exegesis. Its intricate symbolism encompasses the rise and fall of nations, the metamorphosis of religious movements, and the eschatological fate of humanity. Temporal significance. Commencing with the phrase, at the time of the end, verse 40 delineates epochs, pinpointing 1798 and 1989 as pivotal moments. Its unfolding unveils the alpha and omega of prophetic epochs, resonating with historical milestones. Prophetic symbols. Symbolically rich, the verse intertwines geopolitical events with religious movements. The imagery of rivers allegorizes the flow of prophetic currents, guiding the discerning eye through the maze of history. United States in prophecy. Central to verse 40's narrative is the portrayal of the United States, symbolized as the glorious land. Its entwined fate with religious apostasy and political machinations underscores the intricate tapestry of end-time events. Lamblike to dragon, tracking the evolution of the earth beast from a lamblike demeanor to a dragon-speaking entity, the verse forecasts the ideological and moral transformation of the USA in the prophetic theater. Laodicean Adventism, verse 40 not only illuminates the trajectory of nations, but also parallels the spiritual journey of Laodicean Adventism. From its inception to its prophesied fate, the verse encapsulates the theological odyssey of a modern-day religious movement. Judgment and retribution. Embedded within the verse is the theme of divine judgment and retribution. From the investigative judgment to the executive phase, the verse heralds the unfolding of eschatological justice. Threefold union. Akin to Revelation's portrayal, verse 40 unveils the convergence of global powers in a threefold union, poised to enact draconian measures. The impending clash of ideologies signals the climax of human history. Divine call and salvation. Amidst the tumult of end-time events, verse 40 echoes the divine call for repentance and separation from Babylon. The final hour heralds not only judgment, but also salvation for those who heed the heavenly summons. As we unravel the layers of Daniel 11 verse 40, we glimpse the intricate tapestry of prophetic revelation. From historical epochs to spiritual paradigms, this verse serves as a timeless beacon, guiding humanity through the labyrinth of end-time events. With each unfolding prophecy, we are beckoned to discern the signs of the times and prepare for the imminent climax of human history. In the symphony of divine providence, verse 40 resonates as a prelude to the grand finale, urging all to heed the call of salvation amidst the tumult of the last days. Verse 40 of Daniel 11 is one of the most profound verses in God's Word, as is Daniel chapter 8, verse 14. Verse 40 is represented by the Hiddekel River, and the Ulai River represents Daniel chapter 8, verse 14. Verse 40 begins with the words, "And at the time of the end," thus specifically identifying that the beginning of the verse identifies 1798. The 51 words of the verse were unsealed in 1989. When they were recognized as identifying the collapse of the Soviet Union at that time. Those 51 words in the verse represent both the time of the end in 1798 and then another the time of the end in 1989. Alpha and Omega placed his signature on the verse for all who are willing to see and hear. The time of the end for the movements of both the first and third angels are represented in that one verse. The following verse identifies when the papacy, represented as the King of the North, conquers the United States, represented as the glorious land at the soon coming Sunday Law in the United States. Therefore, though the words of verse 40 identify the time of the end in 1798 as the beginning, and the time of the end in 1989 as the ending. The reality is that the prophetic history represented in verse 40 does not finish until verse 41, when the King of the North conquers the glorious land. This means that the history from the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1989 until the soon coming Sunday law in verse 41 represents the history of the United States from President Ronald Reagan until the soon coming Sunday law. That history includes September 11, 2001 and onward unto the hour of the great earthquake of Revelation chapter 11. When the verse was initially unsealed, an argument was raised against the truth that the claim by Pippinger that the verse represents the history of 1798 unto the Sunday law was an absurd claim, for verses in the Bible never represent such long periods of history. We had not thought about the concept of whether there is a limit upon a period of time that can be located in one verse, but we immediately remembered that Revelation chapter 13, verse 11 identifies the very same history, and it does so in one verse. The history of the earth beast began in 1798, and the speaking of the earth beast as a dragon is fulfilled at the soon coming Sunday law. And when the papacy, robbed of its strength, was forced to desist from persecution, John beheld a new power coming up to echo the dragon's voice and carry forward the same cruel and blasphemous work. This power, the last that is to wage war against the church and the law of God, was symbolized by a beast with lamb-like horns. Signs of the Times, November 1, 1899. If a person needed to be technical, verse 40 covers the history of 1798 to verse 41, and in verse 41 the Sunday law is identified. So unlike the single verse in Revelation chapter 13, verse 40 is actually a little bit shorter because the Sunday law is in the next verse, whereas in Revelation chapter 13, 1798 to the Sunday law is in one verse. Sister White informs us the same line of prophecy that is in the book of Daniel is taken up in the book of Revelation, and Revelation chapter 13, verse 11, easily goes right over the top of verse 40 if you choose to apply the principle of line upon line. When you do employ the principle of line upon line, you find that verse 40's representation of Revelation 13's earth beast, the United States, who in verse 40 is represented by the chariots, ships, and horsemen, changes from a lamb-like beast with two horns in 1798 into a dragon-speaking beast at the soon-coming Sunday law, and also that the lamb-like beast has two horns. Verse 40 also represents the symbolic 70 years when the whore of Tyre is forgotten, for the 70 symbolic years are as the days of one king, and a king is a kingdom. Based upon verse 40 and the line of Revelation chapter 13, the kingdom of Bible prophecy that rules for the 70 symbolic years of Isaiah chapter 23 is the earth beast, which has two horns of strength. The earth beast begins with two horns of strength representing republicanism and Protestantism, but as the history of verse 40 draws near its fulfillment in verse 41, its two prophetic strengths are then identified as ships, economic power, and chariots and horsemen, military might. During the 70 symbolic years of Isaiah chapter 23, the whore of Tyre, who in verse 40 is the king of the north, is forgotten. But then, at the end of the 70 symbolic years, she will once again commit fornication with the kings of the earth, as was done in the history leading up to the collapse of the Soviet Union, when all historians confirm that President Reagan secured a secret alliance with the Antichrist of Bible prophecy for the purpose of bringing down the Soviet Union. In the period leading up to 1989, Reagan had already begun a secret illicit relationship with the man of sin. Thus Nebuchadnezzar's musicians began to practice the tune that the forgotten whore was beginning to sing. The unprecedented worldwide ministry of John Paul II in that very history was the beginning of the song and dance that caused all the world to wonder after the beast. Verse 40 also represents the history of Laodicean Adventism, which began in 1798 as Sardis. Then those in Sardis accepted the light that was unsealed, and then the Philadelphian movement came out of Sardis. When the Philadelphian movement rejected the light of 1856, they then transitioned from a movement unto the Laodicean Church in 1863. That church is therefore destined to be spewed out of the mouth of the Lord in verse 41, which is the soon coming Sunday law. Verse 40 represents not only the history of the United States, but also the history of Laodicean Adventism. Laodicean Adventism was given the divine light of God's Word for its anchor point and strength, and the government of the United States was given the divine light of the Constitution of the United States for its anchor point and strength. They both began prophetically as horns in 1798. And by the end of the 70 symbolic years, the apostate Republican horn and the apostate Protestant horn will come together as one horn and speak as a dragon. Verse 40's two horns are the government and the chosen church that represent two lines of prophecy which run together, for they are represented as two horns upon a single beast. Wherever the beast goes, the two horns also go, and they do so in the same prophetic history. The horn of Protestantism has a twofold prophetic nature, represented by Laodicea and Philadelphia. The horn of Republicanism also has a twofold prophetic nature, represented by the Republican and Democratic political parties. The second of each of the horn's twofold nature comes up last and comes up higher, according to Daniel chapter 8. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high. But one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. Daniel 8:3. The twofold characteristics of each horn is illustrated in the line of Christ by the Sadducees and Pharisees, which in the Republican horn equates to liberalism, pro-slavery, democracy, wokeism, and globalism, and conservatism, anti-slavery, a constitutional republic, traditionalists, MAGA. The twofold characteristics of the Protestant horn equates to Philadelphia and Laodicea. There is not a perfect parallel between the two horns' division into a twofold symbol, for neither progressive liberalism or conservative MAGAism comes out on the right side of the Sunday law issue, for the Pharisees and Sadducees came together at the cross. But at the soon coming Sunday law, which was typified by the cross, Laodicea is spewed out of the mouth of the Lord, and the Philadelphian horn is then lifted up as an ensign. Still, the twofold nature of both horns is represented by the theological controversy between the Pharisees and Sadducees. And the messenger to the Gentiles, Paul, in the history of Christ, had formerly been a Pharisee of Pharisees. The methodology of the latter rain, being line upon line, produces great light in verse 40 when it is applied. Revelation chapters 2 through 18 are all in alignment with verse 40. Isaiah chapter 23's testimony of the whore of Tyre aligns with the verse. Of course, there are several other passages that are to be laid over the top of verse 40, but perhaps the most significant line-upon-line application of verse 40 is verse 40 itself. In verse 40, the time of the end in 1798 and the time of the end in 1989 are both set forth. This directs a student of prophecy to lay the time of the end in 1798 over the top of the time of the end in 1989. When that is done, the history of verse 40 produces two lines that each begin in 1798 and continue until the soon coming Sunday law of verse 41. The line that begins in 1798 identifies the internal message of God's last day people, and the line that begins in 1989 identifies the external message of God's last day people during the very same history. Verse 40, therefore, possesses within itself the symbolism represented by the same internal and external prophetic relationship of the seven churches and the seven seals in the book of Revelation. And this prophetic phenomenon is represented in one verse, made up of 51 words. The Millerites recognize the internal-external message of the seven churches and seven seals, but they also recognize that the seven trumpets also represented a third line of truth, which was an element of the history represented by the seven churches and seven seals. The trumpets were, as Miller states, the peculiar judgments that were brought upon Rome. The Millerites understood the judgments of God represented by the seven trumpets were connected with the history of the seven churches and the parallel history of the seven seals. Verse 40 includes the history of September 11, 2001, and in verse 40, the prophetic line of the seven trumpets is therefore also aligned. The first angel arrived in 1798 in order to announce the opening of the judgment in 1844. That judgment breaks down into an investigative and executive judgment. The history of verse 40 is the history of the investigative judgment, and the history of verse 41 onward until Michael stands up and the seven last plagues are poured out is the history of the executive judgment. The executive judgment begins when the United States speaks as a dragon. The lamb-like horns and dragon voice of the symbol point to a striking contradiction between the professions and the practice of the nation thus represented. The speaking of the nation is the action of its legislative and judicial authorities. By such action, it will give the lie to those liberal and peaceful principles which it has put forth as the foundation of its policy. The prediction that it will speak as a dragon and exercise all the power of the first beast plainly foretells a development of the spirit of intolerance and persecution that was manifested by the nations represented by the dragon and the leopard-like beast. And the statement that the beast with two horns causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast indicates that the authority of this nation is to be exercised in enforcing some observance which shall be an act of homage to the papacy. The Great Controversy, 443. When the United States speaks and enforces the soon coming Sunday law, the second voice of Revelation chapter 18 speaks by calling men and women out of Babylon. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her, even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. Revelation 18:4-6. In verse 41, when the United States speaks, those who are still in the threefold environment of modern Babylon are called out when the second voice of Revelation chapter 18 speaks. Those that are then called out are represented in verse 41 as Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. In the verse, those represented in the threefold symbol of modern Babylon escape the hand of the king of the north, the papacy. The Hebrew word escape means to escape by slipperiness, and its inherent meaning is that the escape is accomplished from something that had previous to the escape held those that escape in captivity. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. Daniel 11, verse 41, 42. In verse 42, the papacy, the king of the north, conquers its third geographical obstacle when it takes Egypt, which is a symbol of the United Nations as typified by Herod's birthday when he succumbs to the deceptive dance of Salome, the United States, the daughter of Herodias, the papacy. This identifies when the United Nations, the ten kings of Revelation 17, agree to give their kingdom to the beast for 1 hour. The 1 hour is the hour of Revelation 11's great earthquake and the hour when the whore of Babylon is judged. In verse 42, Egypt, the United Nations, shall not escape. The Hebrew word translated as escape in verse 42 is different than the Hebrew word in verse 41. In verse 42, the word escape means finding no deliverance. But verse 41 is identifying when those previous to the soon coming Sunday law have been holding hands with the papacy, then escape as if by slipperiness. Prior to the hour of the Sunday law crisis, those in the communion of modern Babylon have been accepting the satanic idea that Sunday is God's day of worship. When the mark of the beast is enforced, a person can either accept it for whatever reason or actually believe it to be so. To believe it is to receive the mark in the forehead, and to simply accept it is to receive the mark in your hand. Those who escape the hand of the papacy at the Sunday law reject the satanic idea that God's day of worship is the day of the sun at the very time when the United States and the United Nations are joining hands with the whore of Rome, the papal power, the king of the north. The Protestants of the United States will be foremost in stretching their hands across the gulf to grasp the hand of spiritualism. They will reach over the abyss to clasp hands with the Roman power. And under the influence of this threefold union, this country will follow in the steps of Rome in trampling on the rights of conscience. The Great Controversy, 588. It is important to take the time to set forth the structure of the last six verses of Daniel 11 as we proceed in our considerations of verse 40. The king of the north, which is modern Rome, conquers three geographical obstacles in order to be established on the throne of the earth. Pagan Rome conquered three geographical obstacles, as did papal Rome. So modern Rome conquers the king of the south, the former Soviet Union, in verse 40, and then conquers the glorious land, the United States, in verse 41, and then Egypt, the United Nations, in verses 42 and 43. But as the previous quote of Sister White identifies, the United States joins hands with the papacy and the United Nations at the same time. The threefold union of the dragon, the beast, and false prophet is accomplished at the soon coming Sunday law. Though Daniel chapter 11, verses 41 through 43, identify the simultaneous conquering sequentially. The sequence that is illustrated is representing the flow of events, but they are all accomplished at the soon coming Sunday law. At that point, the second voice of Revelation 18 speaks, right where the United States speaks. God speaks where and when Satan speaks. In verse 44, tidings out of the east and the north trouble the king of the north, and the final papal bloodbath is initiated. Verse 44, as like unto verses 42 and 43, begins in verse 41, when the mighty angel of Revelation 18 begins his call for his other flock to come out of Babylon. The message he presents is the message which identifies Islam of the third woe as his instrument of judgment and the punishment of the whore of Babylon. Islam is represented as the tidings of the east, and the papacy, the counterfeit king of the north, is the tidings of the north. Daniel 11, verse 40, identifies the investigative judgment, and verse 41 through 45 identifies the executive judgment. We will continue our consideration of verse 40 of Daniel 11 in the next article. On one occasion, when in New York City, I was in the night season called upon to behold buildings rising story after story toward heaven. These buildings were warranted to be fireproof, and they were erected to glorify their owners and builders. Higher and still higher these buildings rose, and in them the most costly material was used. Those to whom these buildings belonged were not asking themselves, "How can we best glorify God?" The Lord was not in their thoughts. I thought, "Oh, that those who are thus investing their means could see their course as God sees it. They are piling up magnificent buildings, but how foolish in the sight of the ruler of the universe is their planning and devising. They are not studying with all the powers of heart and mind how they may glorify God. They have lost sight of this, the first duty of man." As these lofty buildings went up, the owners rejoiced with ambitious pride that they had money to use in gratifying self and provoking the envy of their neighbors. Much of the money that they thus invested had been obtained through exaction, through grinding down the poor. They forgot that in heaven an account of every business transaction is kept, every unjust deal, every fraudulent act is there recorded. The time is coming when in their fraud and insolence, men will reach a point that the Lord will not permit them to pass, and they will learn that there is a limit to the forbearance of Jehovah. The scene that next passed before me was an alarm of fire. Men looked at the lofty and supposedly fireproof buildings and said, "They are perfectly safe." But these buildings were consumed as if made of pitch. The fire engines could do nothing to stay the destruction. The firemen were unable to operate the engines. I am instructed that when the Lord's time comes, should no change have taken place in the hearts of proud, ambitious human beings, men will find that the hand that had been strong to save will be strong to destroy. No earthly power can stay the hand of God. No material can be used in the erection of buildings that will preserve them from destruction when God's appointed time comes to send retribution on men for their disregard of His law and for their selfish ambition. There are not many, even among educators and statesmen, who comprehend the causes that underlie the present state of society. Those who hold the reins of government are not able to solve the problem of moral corruption, poverty, pauperism, and increasing crime. They are struggling in vain to place business operations on a more secure basis. If men would give more heed to the teaching of God's word, they would find a solution of the problems that perplex them. The scriptures describe the condition of the world just before Christ's second coming. Of the men who by robbery and extortion are amassing great riches, it is written, "Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth, and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you." James 5:3-6. But who reads the warnings given by the fast-fulfilling signs of the times? What impression is made upon worldlings? What change is seen in their attitude? No more than was seen in the attitude of the inhabitants of the Noachian world. Absorbed in worldly business and pleasure, the antediluvians knew not until the flood came and took them all away. Matthew 24:39. They had heaven-sent warnings, but they refused to listen. And today the world, utterly regardless of the warning voice of God, is hurrying on to eternal ruin. The world is stirred with the spirit of war. The prophecy of the 11th chapter of Daniel has nearly reached its complete fulfillment. Soon the scenes of trouble spoken of in the prophecies will take place. Testimonies to the Church, Volume 9, page 11.